This is Cuprial 3.
Above his bed.
But he survived it.
Yes, fortunately it missed him, or Lord knows what would have happened.
Was this chap put on a charge?
No.
They didn't, just let off?
Well, I don't know what happened quietly, but when they were operating, a lot of allowance was made for behaviour. I mean...
Was his CO a Canadian?
Yes, they were. He was a French-Canadian, Johnny Fokker. And this other one wasn't. And the French-Canadians and the Canadians don't like each other. And as I say, he could be very brusque, you know, Johnny, because we had a... later on, when they changed it from 30 ops to so many hours, I can't remember how many hours they had to do, we used to have to keep a card for every member of the air crew, in every aircraft, of their hours, when they went and everything. And this sergeant came to me one day and he said that he'd been put on ops and actually he'd finished. And I said, yes, you have finished. So he said, well, would you speak to Johnny for me? He said, because he won't listen to me. So when Johnny, he was coming up into the ops room, and I told him, I said, sergeant, whatever his name was, has done his ops. Oh, all right, he said, all right, he said, take him off. And that was it. And so he could be like that, you see.
Did Pocklington ever get attacked by the enemy air force?
No, not while I was there. We did once have one, a couple of air raids, but they never air raid sirens, but warnings, but they never came to anything. Because you see, you could get the Germans in your landing circuit from time to time.
Intruders.
Intruders. And we were lucky. We never had one when I was there that shot anybody down, anyway.
Were they flying Halifaxes?
Yes. Wellingtons when I first went, and then we converted to Halifaxes.
Any other stories from Pocklington that happened to you?
Well, wonder. Oh, we used to fly with the crews, you know, weren't allowed to, but we used to fly on cross countries and a fighter affiliation and things like that. And so you changed your crews as they finished, and you had a new one, you see. And anyway, we were trying a new aircraft one day, and when you're there in the aircraft, I used to sit next to the captain, and when you're there, you have to keep quiet till we come off the air, so as they don't hear your voice, you see. And as we were taking off, I looked to the right, and I thought, oh, my God. And there's petrol coming back out of the air intakes, just coming back. And I looked there, and it's the same on the port side. So I just said to Higgy, or I didn't say, I pointed and, oh, Jesus, he says. And so we were by this time pretty well airborne. I mean, we were quite 300 or 400 feet up, I suppose. And we whisked round the circuit and we're back in down and landed, and the engines cut before you can say knife, you know, because we could have gone off with a loud bang at any minute if there'd been any spark from the exhaust manifolds.
This was the Halifax, wasn't it?
Yes. So we did have our excitements. And fighter affiliation one day is another crew of mine. Actually, the captain of that was Alan Gibson. Do you remember the comet that came down in the Mediterranean?
Yes.
Well, Alan Gibson was the pilot of that. It's just sad, isn't it, after all the war?
Yeah.
But we had a bet on that they'd make me air sick. You see, and I said they wouldn't, rather foolhardily. And so off we went, and we took an ATC boy with us, because they used to give them flights to enthuse them into flying. And he was in the mid-upper, and off we went. And Alan just threw it, he really threw the aircraft round the sky like nobody's business. I mean, you wouldn't think Halifax could do the things he did to it. And I was having, I was thinking, if this goes on much longer, you know, I am going to be ill. But anyway, fortunately, that was it. But the poor little ATC boy was so sick, you wouldn't believe it. Well, if they were ill in the aircraft, whoever it was had to pay the ground crew half a crown for cleaning it out, you see. So I felt so guilty about this because it was done for my benefit. I paid it. But we used to fly quite a lot. Pauline, who was a cipher officer, and one or two of the others, and all the other stations WAF flew as well. And in fact, we were told off the record that somebody had gone on ops and been killed, and we were not to go on ops. But more than one did. There's no doubt about it.
Did you ever go on operation?
I was offered. It was Hamburg, and it was Higgy again, and he said, what about coming? And I hadn't a parachute, you see, and I said, I've made that my excuse, I'm afraid. And I said, well, I'm not coming if I hadn't a parachute, because it's not fair. But I honestly don't think I had the guts. And I didn't want to let them down. I mean, I'd seen too many people coming back in shattered nerves. You don't know how your reaction's going to be, do you?
No.
And I didn't think I could do it, which was perhaps fortunate, because they were shot down over Hamburg. Not that time, but another.
Which was the happier period for you, Parklington or Debden?
Debden, I think.
Why was that?
Well, the fighter boys are different from the bomber boys. The fighter boys are individuals, aren't they? They fly individually. And they were very young. Now, the bomber boys, although some of them were very young, they fly as a family. They're an integrated family group, and they're not quite as Mad Hat, I think, although they could be. It's a different sort of personality, isn't it?
Yes.
I enjoyed being with bombers, if you can call it that. What I'm saying is I liked the work, and I found... I liked the men. I found them fascinating and equally brave, perhaps more brave, I don't know, because their trips of, you know, they're doing a trip to Berlin and back. It's a long, long way. And when you saw the results on some of them, I mean, it really was... there are people who still have nightmares, I'm sure. And one of my navigators, I was queen of the navigators union at Pocklington.
What exactly do you mean?
Well, I call them my navigators, and I was, I don't know what I mean really. It's just that I was the queen of the navigators. You haven't seen my thingy that they sent me. I abdicated one day. Because I was cross, because I hadn't got the information I wanted for the operation. And I got a scroll back in the before takeoff, refusing it. I can show you the copy, because I've given Simon the real one, if you'd like to see it.
So you specialised in dealing with navigators?
Navigators, so. Yes. And, yes, they were mine, the navigators.
How did you come to leave Parklington in November 43?
If you want the true story of that, I'll give you it.
Please.
John had gone, that was the other WAF, had gone. She was a married lady and she had a baby, so she left. And Dieter married one of the pilots and she left also to have a baby. And I was the only one left of the old lot. And we had another WAF who was absolutely useless. She really was. I can't remember who did it. I think it must have been a man. It must have been a man who did the other watch. Anyway, we got a new ops squadron leader. I think some of this ought to be off the record. And I knew him. I'd known him in Ilkley, and he was a friend of my eldest sister's. Now, before this, we'd had a new MO who came, and I had an attack of cystitis. And knowing the old doc, you see, you rang him up and said, look, I'm not feeling very well, doc. Would you come up and see me? I'd just come off night duty from, you know, it was 7 at night until 9 in the morning night duty. I mean, it's a long time. And I'd gone to bed, and he said, no, you wouldn't come and see me. I could get up and go down and see him. And I thought, oh, you know, that's a bit off. Anyway, I did as he said, because I couldn't stay in bed. I was sobbing in and out. And his greeting to me was, oh, he said, I believe you're Marjorie's sister. Don't do any work, do you? And I thought, Anyway, he found I really had got cystitis, and he changed his tune a bit. But when this new squadron leader came, he was quite nice, and I mean, he was my squadron leader, so I wasn't too friendly with him, although I knew him, you know, I sort of didn't take an awful lot of notice, really. He just went on, and I kept getting offers of postings. And eventually Gus had me in, that's the base commander, and said, look, Edith, he said, you're going to have to accept the next posting. So I said, all right, sir. So I did, and that was to 92 group. Well, afterwards, a good time after that, when I was in Ilkley, I met him. Oh, Edith, he said, come and have a drink with me. So I said, oh, yeah, okay, you know, fine. And before, as we sat down, he said, you know, I owe you an apology. He said, I posted the wrong one. So I said, it was Marjorie, wasn't it? And he said, yes. And I said, oh, well, it didn't matter. I said, I'd been there long enough. It was time I left anyway, really. Which it was. And so it just shows you how things work, doesn't it?
Yes.
She didn't like me being in with all these men, you see.
So you went to HQ 92 group?
Yes, at Winslow.
What was 92 group?
It was a training. It was OTU, Operational Training Units, round all the stations, Silverstone, Market Harbour, Desborough and all those were all under our command, and I used to have to go round inspecting the intersections from time to time, and I hated it.
Inspecting what section?
The intelligence sections. And I hated it. And I asked the CO, the squadron leader intelligence, if he'd get me posted back onto ops, which he did. That's why I went to Bourne.
This is doing what? With the Pathfinders?
Yes. Back into ops intelligence it should have been. But the squadron leader ops there didn't like women. You got them occasionally. And he wouldn't let me go do ops, as I'd done at Pocklington. So I just did intelligence. But they came from headquarters at Pathfinders, the man there who I'd known at Four Group, and he said he'd heard that he wouldn't let me do it. Did I want to be posted? And I said, well, I was settled in now, I might as well stay where I was. So I did, which was a mistake, I think, afterwards.
Where is Bourne?
It's near Cambridge. It's the other side. It's on the Maddingley Road. It's haunted, it is.
Really?
Mm.
Did you see any ghosts?
No, I didn't see any, but there were voices that they hear on the road from one of the... it's in the one of the ghost books.
Did you believe in it yourself?
Oh, yeah, I do think... I'll tell you a story now. You probably think I'm mad. After Dennis was and Faye's fiancé were killed, we knew a lady at the KP restaurant in Cambridge who went to see a medium, and she persuaded us to go, so we went with a bit of trepidation, and she's an enormous woman, about 20 stone, and she told us to sit down and keep quiet unless she asked us something. So we did as we were told, and she was quite amazing. She told me what happened to Dennis. I mean, I shan't ever know, shall I get the other side? But it was feasible. She just said he'd been shot down, and it was like a submarine going down to sea. Now, I hadn't opened my mouth, so she didn't know he'd gone down into the sea, and that he hadn't been shot. He'd drowned. Now, this was quite feasible, because just before Dennis was killed, he told me that the pin in his harness was bent and he couldn't get it out himself. He had to get his ground crew to help him. And I said to him, you must have it put straight. And I don't think he did, probably. I mean, that's a supposition, isn't it? But it made sense. Anyway, she told us then that the war was going to get on. It was evil against good, or good against evil, really. And that it would gradually get that Berlin was bombed every day and night, which at that time was madness. And she told us that aircrew that had gone on before, as she called it, would come back and help those flying at times. And of course you think, oh well, rubbish, you know. But when I was at Pocklington one night, we had a Halifax landed. I mean, it wasn't one of ours, it came in and stopped at the end of the runway, and there was only a tail gunner in it. Everybody had bailed out before. He didn't know, because he'd had his wireless shot to pieces, his radio, his intercom. And when he was told, he just fainted. And so everybody would say, well, how on earth? And so I didn't dare say it to anybody else, but I said, well, I bet it's one of those ones that came and flew it in from. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But we don't know about these things, do we? And other people had other things happen. I mean, there are lots of WAF now who will tell you things that happened that they wouldn't have dared to tell anybody. You know, and appearances of their fiancés and various things like this. And I've in fact had one myself. After I'd written the memoirs for the Imperial War Museum, I have a very bad habit of having breakfast in bed and reading. And I was reading, and I suddenly think, and I turn my head, and there's Dennis standing, just as I'd seen him last time, no hat. He bent down and kissed me very gently, and I felt it on the lips, straightened up, smiled, and this faded. And I thought, oh, he approves. That was my immediate thought, and it was a lovely, warm feeling. And all the WAF who've had these sort of things will tell you it's a lovely, warm feeling. And I know it sounds crazy.
So this medium was operating in Cambridge, was it?
Yes.
In 1914?
Yes.
Whereabouts in Cambridge did she practice?
Well, I know where it was, but I can't tell you. It was in a little cottage on the way out, in fact going, as it turned out in the end, towards Maddingley and all that, but at that time I didn't know that. It was a little cottage, and she told us a lot. And Pam had lost, well, he wasn't actually engaged to her, but he was an army man who'd gone to Iceland, and she hadn't heard. So she said, had we any questions? So I said, yes, could you tell us about this army man? She said, yes, he's been torpedoed. So anyway, we thought, oh well, you know. Well, it turned out he had indeed been torpedoed, we heard later, on the way to Iceland. So it makes you think. And Faye and I came out, and I said, look, Faye, I said, I think this is dangerous. I don't think we should dabble in this anymore. And she said, no, I agree with you. Definitely not.
So you only made the one visit?
We only made the one visit. Well, it's certainly, people can go mad, you know, doing this sort of thing.
Can you tell me about the Pathfinders at Bonn, please?
Yes, when I first arrived, we had this 97 Squadron, who were posted to Gravely and went within the week. And we'd had a squadron, 105 Squadron, of Mosquitoes posted in. Now, they were an oboe squadron. And really, I was to do with them. We did have other, I can't remember the name of the numbers of the other squadrons, because we changed various Mosquito squadrons from time to time. But we had 105 all the time until after VE Day when they went to Upwood. But and as you know, I'm sure they operated individually. They had, because they were oboe, they went off in their little at their special time and did their thing and came home. So they didn't go off as a squadron, so to speak, often, unless they were bombing instead of oboeing, so to speak.
But you were debriefing them when they came back, were you?
Sometimes I did. He wouldn't always let me do it, but I did do.
What were they like when they came back? Any different?
No, not really. It was a, in a way, no. How do you put that? It was the same general result, if you see what I mean. But on the other hand, there were just two of them. And so they, it was slightly, it's only subtle, isn't it, the differences. It was, they weren't families like the heavies are, were.
And presumably they weren't suffering as many losses.
No, they weren't. They weren't, because they were quickly in and quickly out. Although we did have losses, and we lost one on the beaches on D-Day. An Australian.
What are your own D-Day memories?
The night that it started, I was on duty, and the first crews that came in said, "My God, it's started. You can't see the channel for ships." And that's what I remember. And we were all so excited, we couldn't wait for people to come in and tell us what else was going on, which in fact wasn't a lot at that time, because they were still on the way over. And after that, it was just one mad dash across, helping the bombing the Germans. Because we bombed a lot of the V1 sites as well.
From Bonn?
From Bonn. I've actually got some air pictures from there, taken on the cameras, which I nicked.
Any other incidents that happened to you at Bonn?
I suppose there's quite a lot, really. It wasn't like Pocklington. I think it's because there were less people. See, not you hadn't got all that great backup. So it was much smaller. I suppose in a way it was more intimate. I think that it was all just part of it. It just sort of goes on, doesn't it? I can't think of anything in particular that, except we had trouble with the Americans, of course.
What trouble did you have with them there? Bonn?
Well, not at Bourne itself, but in Cambridge we did. I mean, there were always fights and there was trouble. And when they came, we weren't at the WAF, weren't allowed to go into Cambridge without men at night, because they behaved so badly, the Americans in Cambridge. And
what did they do?
Well, at that particular time, they'd been dragging women off bicycles, and I don't know if there was actual rape, but there was talk of it. And we just weren't allowed to go in without male escorts. And they were so cocky. I mean, I remember walking along in Cambridge. I was going back to camp, actually, because I was on in the afternoon. 11 o'clock in the morning, and some American heaves up alongside and says, "Say, babe, what about a date?" Which received a very short answer. They weren't averse.
Were these American airmen or army?
Yes, they were from Bassingbourne, most of them then at that time. We had quite a lot of American Air Force round about. But they were so... Yes, they were just cocky. I had the wing commander, Tommy, of 105 Squadron. I was looking after his wife one evening because... they'd all gone to a party, an inter oboe party at Little Storm, and she was very pregnant, and so Tommy said, "Would I look after and go with her home for the night?" So I said, "Yes, of course I would." Anyway, two Americans landed, and when we were having dinner, or rather when we were walking out from having dinner, they made some very rude remarks, these two. So I said to Beryl, "Go on, Beryl, and and the Andrew, I'll join you in a minute. And I went back and I didn't half tell them off. I made them stand up and I gave them a real stripping down about being so rude in our mess.
What did they say?
They didn't say anything.
What did they say that was rude?
Oh, they made some rude remark about WAF being pregnant and, you know, this sort of thing. Laughed and it made me very angry. Especially since they were responsible for quite a lot of that sort of thing.
You told them to stand up, did you?
I did. I made them stand up and told them when they came to somebody's mess they would kindly behave themselves.
Did they look chastened or
yeah, they
did they have grins on their face?
No, they were very quiet and they finished the meal and left immediately. I was livid.
So they were inferior in rank to you, were they?
I don't know what their rank was, to be quite honest. I didn't care. They were guests in our mess and should behave accordingly.
Were you at Bonn when VE Day came?
Yes, I was.
What happened on VE Day?
Well, I went into ops at, in the, I suppose, 9 o'clock, probably on. And we were told that it was VE Day and get lost, you know, there's no work today. And walking back from the from there to the mess, and I met Tommy on the way, and he said, come on, Edie, he said, we're all off into Cambridge. So I said, fine, suited me. So we all piled into cars, and we didn't actually go to Cambridge. We went to, where Gray's Elegy is.
The graveyard.
Yeah, which way Geoffrey Archer lives. So we went to the Green Man at Grantchester. It was a gorgeous day. We picked up Beryl on the way. That's Tommy's wife. And we just had a party. Then Tommy said, you know, would I take Beryl into Cambridge for lunch because she had to have it. And as a matter of fact, I was quite pleased because I can't drink like they were drinking. You know. So off we went and had lunch. And when we came back, they were sort of sitting. And I always remember Tommy going, I've got little green men here, you know. So I think, shall we go back to the mess? So we went back to the mess and arranged a party for the evening. And we danced right through the night, as far as I remember.